ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hi, I'm Patricia Carvelis, the host of Politics Now, the ABC's podcast unpacking the latest political news when it happens. Every weekday, you'll hear me and the sharpest political minds at the ABC.
Me, Jacob Greber.
Me, Raf Epstein.
Me, Claudia Long.
Me, David Spears.
And me, Melissa Clark, in the chair for Fran Kelly for The Party Room, every Thursday.
So join me for Politics Now, download and follow on the ABC Listen app.
Kamala Harris is back on your screens. Yes, she's spruiking a memoir, but she's also testing the waters to see if she could run again for the US presidency. Today, 7:30 host Sarah Ferguson on her Australian exclusive and at times testy interview with the former vice president. I'm Sam Hawley on Gadigal land in Sydney. This is ABC News Daily. Sarah, before we get started, and this is a bit on the side, but I always find it somewhat confusing how in America, once you're vice president, you're always vice president. So when you talk about Kamala Harris, it's still Vice President Harris. It can sort of trip you up a bit.
Well, actually, it did trip me up a bit because I don't know if you noticed, but there's like a tiny little pause in the beginning of my hello to Kamala Harris for exactly that reason, right, Sam, which is... It flashed through my mind at a, you know, in a nanosecond. Oh, am I supposed to call her vice president? But I'm Australian, so I'm just going to say Kamala Harris, but exactly.
Kamala Harris, welcome to 7:30.
Thank you. It's good to be with you.
Sarah, you travelled to London to interview Kamala Harris about this new book, of course, that she's put out. Just before we get into that, though, tell me what she was like. I gather it would have been a pretty tightly controlled affair.
Yes. Well, let me set the scene for you, Sam. It's in the storied Claridge's Hotel, so a place of great grandeur and high history. A vast hallway, a lift with a sofa in it. I don't think I've ever seen that before.
Nice.
And then we set up in one room, and what do we hear but the great guffaw, the only Kamala Harris, could only be her sound, that big full-throated laugh that she has that the Republicans actually sort of tried to weaponize during the campaign. I think Trump called her laughing Kamala Harris. So that was the first thing. She is very personable, deeply charming.
Hello. Nice to meet you again.
Nice to meet you again. Thank you.
Okay.
Hi, everyone.
It's great
Hello.
To have you.
Hello.
She has a kind of freshness about her. She's a very contemporary person. So, in that sense, it's tightly controlled, but she's very good at projecting warmth.
All right, well, Sarah, let's now turn to your interview with her. You started off by asking Kamala Harris about the moment that she realised she'd lost that election to Donald Trump, and she described feeling a grief similar to what she felt when her mother actually died.
I felt a level of grief for my country. I knew what was going to happen.
Her description of that moment is just saying, oh, my God, over and over again. Mm. She says that it was an immediate grief and shock associated with her feelings for the country, but that's not quite true, is it? Because, of course, at the same time, for any human to feel the proximity to that seat of power, that position of enormous influence in the world, unlike any other, there is also deep personal loss in that. And at the same time, she's in the position she loses. And in that moment of loss, she has to come to terms immediately with her very close understanding of what Donald Trump was about to do.
This was about my country and the people. I knew he meant what he said about weaponizing the Department of Justice against his political enemies. I knew what he meant around what it would be in terms of how he felt about January 6th and whether he believed in even the efficacy of that election. Mm. and what he would do around releasing the January Sixers. I knew what he would do.
Let's discuss now then what happened before she actually took over, because she writes about this in the book and you questioned her about this. She says that she never discussed with President Biden her concerns over his ability, of how frail he appeared. And he didn't raise it either. And that in itself is just incredible, isn't it?
So this is where she is, in some ways, you would say, at her most candid. So she is sensible enough to go to this question head on. She's looked back. She says that it was reckless.
And I ask myself, was it grace or was it recklessness on my part? And I think it was reckless.
That's a very big word for a politician, yeah. Reckless, if you think about that, because it has with it the inference of careless and or indifference to, you know, what the consequences of that decision were. So a reckless decision not to do that, that's very strong. But, Sam, she wants to make a very fine distinction between her issues with Joe Biden. She said she and the other Democrats had a kind of hypnotized, they had a mantra that said it's up to Joe and Jill to decide. But for her, she wants to say her concerns were only about his ability to campaign, to sustain the rigors of a campaign. And this got testy.
You went on. What exactly would you like to ask? Be more specific, if you don't mind.
Was it Joe Biden's decision, his failure to recognize his own frailties in that position, that put you in the position that made it almost impossible to win that race?
He was not frail as president of the United States.
But he had frailties. We all saw the debate.
I do believe that Joe Biden had the capacity to be president of the United States, and I have never doubted that he had the capacity to be president of the United States. If you want to talk about whether he had the ability to endure what a race for president of the United States would require in that political environment in 2024, as I've said in the book, I had concerns.
Like the campaign was separate from governing.
Doesn't make sense, does it?
It doesn't at all. And also the entire world at this point, we're looking at the gaffes, the mistakes, the missteps he was making, the disastrous debate, Sarah. It is hard to comprehend why she didn't intervene at that point. And she can say she did it for all these reasons, but you still go, oh, why not?
There is always a question, Sam, as you know, when you come out of an interview that or a comment that you haven't made that you think, So I think there is a question about the fetishizing of the US presidency, and I think this is part of it. We didn't discuss this, but, you know, they make a fetish out of it, and so the notion of the president as all-powerful is part of the problem, part of the reason why she didn't. But, of course, I put it to her in the obvious terms that she had a responsibility to the American public, to America, not just to the Democratic Party and its chances of defeating Trump, but in fact to everybody. If she thought that he was frail or lacked capacity, didn't she have that responsibility?
Well, we saw the debate. We saw the difficulty he had marshalling his thoughts.
I have answered that question. I do not believe that
I think it's just hard watching the debate to see how there could not be a problem long term with someone who can't marshal their thoughts. I'm not saying his acuity wasn't present.
I talked about that in the book. And I also mentioned the context in which that debate occurred.
She didn't like that line of questioning, but it goes to the central argument of her own book, which is 107 days was not long enough for her to mount a victorious campaign.
Yeah. So is she angry then, Sarah, about the fact that Joe Biden and Jill Biden held on for so long that he then gave her such a short period, 107 days, to try and mount a convincing campaign?
Well, this is where it gets really interesting, Sam, because in the book, there's quite a lot of language around hurt and disappointment with regards to Joe Biden. First of all, as president, and how he treated her as vice president. And then there's this incredible scene in the book where she is getting ready to debate Trump, you know, one of the most difficult things to do in the world for any politician, right? And she takes a call from Joe Biden, and after sort of briefly wishing her luck, he goes on to talk about some issue he's got with donors. He's heard that she's slagging him off to donors. and then talks about his own debates against Donald Trump, which is deeply unhelpful at that incredibly tense moment. And in the book, she describes how angry she was. But when I asked her about that in the interview, she really didn't want to spell it out.
Are you unwilling or reluctant to have your criticisms of Joe Biden, as frank as they are in the book, on tape, on camera?
Of course not. I wouldn't have written a book if I didn't want to be on record about that. That's a curious question.
And so I wondered whether there is a gap between what she's prepared to write in a memoir and what she wants, you know, in the old language, on tape, being circulated, able to be circulated forever, because she still needs Democratic power brokers who like Joe Biden to back her. So I think there's something going on there.
What makes you think the voters might think differently about you if you ran again?
I'm not at that point of focused on that. My focus is on the book tour and actually being out with the people and lifting their voices.
Well, Sarah, it's clear that Kamala Harris has not ruled out running for the presidency again. But what do you think? Would the American people elect her a second time around? And for that matter, would the Democrats give her another go?
I think it's a very steep climb. Mm. I think we have got now, though, in the last couple of years, so used to extreme disruption that you would be very bold to write off anything. The problem is she looks like she has this, and I asked her about this, she has this now association with Joe Biden, and is that a handicap? She's in the position where she can never truly sever herself from that administration. So that does she have enough capacity to create something so brand new where she can leave that behind and it isn't a drag on her? And I think it's very hard to imagine that.
Does that association now become the thing that stops you running again?
You know, I've been on this book tour for a month. Tens of thousands of people are showing up for it. So I think there is an appetite for this conversation that I'm having with the American people.
Is there an appetite for Kamala Harris as president?
We will see if I choose to run.
And of course, Sarah, just to note this is the second interview you've done with a presidential candidate who lost against Donald Trump, because you also interviewed Hillary Clinton.
Go figure.
Because the other question, obviously, is are Americans ready again to have a female candidate and actually vote one in?
I think it's harder. Now, with Hillary, she was doing exactly the same thing. It really is. It's kind of an uncanny parallel. Mm. She lost to Trump. She did win the popular vote. So, you know, that she had that and Kamala Harris didn't. Mm. But, you know, Hillary had made that terrible comment about the deplorables. She had kind of didn't know how to deal with what was then the rising MAGA movement. I think there is a truth here, Sam, that it is harder for a woman. We haven't yet, I think, found a woman who is a perfect fit for that position. There's also a really practical thing. You know, I think Kamala Harris was good at rallies, but it's very hard for a woman to project loudness, strength on a stage. It's a very difficult thing for a woman to find a register in her voice to do that. So I still think there are built-in challenges for a woman in campaigning for that position. So I think that it's still a very big challenge, and I don't think Kamala Harris, any more than Hillary Clinton, has found a way to talk about the MAGA movement and what it means and what it represents and to deal with that essential problem for the Democrats, which is the drifting away of the vast American working class from the Democratic Party. It's a massive challenge.
Well, while the Democrats do try and sort themselves out then, Sarah, the world has, of course, Donald Trump. And just to end, he has suggested, of course, that in fact he wants to run again, even though he can't, of course, under the Constitution, for a third term. You know, you did discuss with her the concerns of what is going on in America.
Yes. So again, we are in this peculiar time when the certainties of the past are no longer the certainties of the present. It does seem like a long way away, but whoever it is, whether it's Trump or a Trump acolyte, it feels like it's going to be a Trump Republican, right? So whatever happens, the Democrats, whether it's a crazy new world with a changed constitution or it's a Trump acolyte, the Democrats have still got to find someone who can cut the Republicans off from that vast working class base that has drifted towards the Republicans. So the challenge remains incredibly high, and I don't know that the leadership has emerged yet to achieve that.
Sarah Ferguson is the host of 7:30 on ABC TV. You can watch her full interview with Kamala Harris on ABC iView. This episode was produced by Sydney Peed and Jessica Wukyanov. Audio production by Cinema Nippard. Our supervising producer is David Cody. I'm Sam Hawley. Thanks for listening.